Now, do you want to be happier, healthier, to be a better person than you currently are? There's a good chance you'd say yes to, I don't know, at least one of those questions.
Our next guest says there's good news. There are decades of psychological research that can help make us help us make positive changes in our daily lives, but you don't have to read thousands of academic journals to figure out how to do it.
Regan Gruing joins us now to tell us how to get psyched. He's the Ben J. and Joyce Rosenberg Professor of Human Development and Psychology at UW Green Bay. He did a TEDx talk called Get Psyched, Think Stronger, Live Longer. Regan, good to have you back.
Thanks a lot, Rob.
Let's start with
Veronica.
Let's start with a really small question, Regan. Why do we think, believe, and behave the way that we do?
Wow, that's a small question, isn't it, Rob? Yeah. Well, you know, the good news is I do have a short answer. And let me preface it by saying this is a short answer that comes from about 20 plus years of teaching and doing research in psychology. And the short answer is that it really boils down to our biology and what we already have, and you got to need be aware of that. It boils down to how we've learned to do the things that we do, and it boils down to our social networks. So we really think, feel, behave because of the biology we have, our learned experiences, and our social networks. And, you know, we can unpack that, but that's the short answer.
So by the time you get to a particular age, it seems like that stuff has been imprinted on us and that our behavior is in this track and we're going to keep rolling down that track no matter what. But can we actually change ourselves?
So the good news is yes. The bad news is it takes some work, but you know, few good things come easily. One of my favorite lines from The Princess Bride is, life is pain, princess, and anybody who tells you anything otherwise is trying to sell you something.
So, that's a good line.
Yeah. So you can change things. You can change things. But what you said about imprinting, we now know that the age that you're talking about is very different. So if you have a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old, that's exactly where they're developing their food preferences, for example. If you have a 10-year-old or 11-year-old, that's the key times where they're developing habits about exercising and eating well and drinking well. Now, by the time you get to 18 or 19, a lot of those experiences are already automatic. By the time you get beyond that, they are even more firmly entrenched and you've got into a routine or a habit of doing them. That's why one of the key things is to realize that some of your thoughts and some of your reactions are automatic. I mean, that's important. They are automatic. It's going to happen. But you've got to be able to see them, recognize that they're automatic, and then make some changes.
Right, and that you've got kind of a 3-point plan that we're going to get to in a minute, but it seems like that's a tall order. Once we're sort of locked into these patterns of behavior and these automatic responses, how do we, I guess, step outside of ourselves and treat ourselves as psychological subjects so we can understand ourselves to start making changes?
And I think the key word in that question is understand. And I think we've got to understand the sources of our feelings and behaviors. I think most of us don't realize that how much of what we do is biologically based. And let me, you know, there are two key fascinating things here. When I say biologically based, our neurons and in our brain, they are firing millions of times. I mean, in the last 5 minutes that we've been talking, our neurons, yours and mine and our listeners, have fired probably millions of times. Now, the crazy thing is, by the time we are conscious of something, our brains have already done a lot of work. So it's that proverbial tip of the iceberg. When I have a conscious thought, I may go, oh, I'm so conscious, I'm so in charge of myself. But the reality is that conscious thought I've had is the result of a lifetime of biology and reactions that are all taking place non-consciously. So to go back to that key word in your question, it's we've got to understand that a lot of the ways we think are automatic, that a lot of the ways we think and feel are biological in nature. And the moment we understand that, I think it puts us in a position to do something more about it versus sitting back and going, oh, that's who I am.
We're talking to Regan Gurung right now from the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, and he's sharing ways that we can use psychological research to improve our lives. And let's get into your plan, Regan. You've got a three-point plan to address what you're talking about here, and it is chill, drill, and build. Let's start with chill. What is that one?
So as far as chilling goes, and that's one of those things where it reminds us that when we feel agitated or whenever we experience something, there's a lot of biology going on. I'm a stress researcher. I've studied stress a lot. Whenever we get stressed, our bodies are releasing or pumping our system full of catecholamines and endorphins and or epinephrine and norepinephrine, a whole bunch of chemicals. And all those chemicals are circulating through our bodies when we are stressed. When I say one of the first things we should do is chill, is literally, I mean, pull yourself away from those situations that are causing you aggravation. This could be a heated discussion or debate. This could be, a fight that you're having. This could be somebody who's making you angry. Move away from that, because when we chill or take some time out, it gives those circulating chemicals in our body some time to subside. So one of the first steps is that actually pulling back. And the classic example comes from anger. For the longest time, and I can remember when I was first teaching introductory psychology, one of the first things that surprised many, many folks is that instead of throwing punches or breaking plates or doing something like that when you're angry, research has shown that actually just pulling back and being quiet and moving away from everything actually does better for your anger, because your anger then subsides. So the whole, boy, I feel like punching something, well, that's actually not a good idea. That could aggravate you more. So instead, chill, pull away from the situation. That lets your brain, you know, your blood pressure go down. It lets those circulating chemicals go down.
So if we have a habit, say a certain situation, whether it's, I don't know, driving or arguing with someone or whatever, that sets us off and we know we're not our best self in that moment, how do we start to train ourselves to chill, to take that minute before that initial response that's just going to make things worse?
So interestingly enough, sometimes the chill is great for when you're already in that situation. When it comes to how do we actually prevent situations, that's, I think, where my second thought of drilling comes in. I think it's practicing anticipating situations and then practicing the actual thoughts you will make yourself think when that situation comes up. So when I say drill, I mean we've got to practice over and over again. We've got to practice thinking differently. We've got to be able to recognize that automatic thought that pops into our head, and in the anger situation, you know, oh, here's that person doing that thing again, right? We've got to recognize that automatic thought. We've just got to practice a different behavior or thought that we can substitute. And that's why the drilling is so important, because many of our reactions, yours, mine, by the time you're, gosh, 18, let alone 12, 13 or older, but even by 12 or 13, you've got these automatic thoughts. And we've got to practice literally changing how we think about situations. And that does take practice. It takes that drilling over and over and over again. So before you get into a situation with somebody that could make you angry, you've got to, if you know, oh, you know what? The last time I spoke to this person, or this kind of situation makes me angry, you practice a priori beforehand, what will you think or do if that situation gets there? And it's that practice over and over that actually changes the old habits that you have for new habits and healthier ones.
I want to ask you about the chilling aspect of what you were saying again. My grandparents always used to say, don't go to bed angry. But, you know, there were times in my life when I thought, but I'm mad. And then if I waited till the next morning, then I wouldn't be. So were they wrong?
So I think your grandparents tap into another very interesting way of coping. And when we cope, one of the successful ways of coping is technically referred to as emotional expression. But it's really what your grandparents say, which is talk about it. Now, that talking about it works for most people, for many people. But there are some of us who actually just need some time. And the reality is, depending on how angry you are, it's better to let that person take some time to themselves and then talk to them versus pushing them to talk. And I think there's where that balance comes in. There's no doubt that expressing your emotions and talking about something, there's no doubt that that helps, but it's all timing. So it's always chill first. Make sure that that person is ready to talk, is ready to get into the issues, and then you're going to be much more successful.
And then with drilling, you've talked about practicing to avoid relying on stereotypes of other people based on a lot of different factors. How does that work?
Oh, absolutely. I think as a social psychologist, one of the first few things I studied was stereotyping. And by definition, stereotyping is when we have this general sense of a whole group of people or event. And we see an example of that group and we assume everybody's like that. So, you know, one of the things I talked about even in the TED Talk is whenever people run into me and I'm Indian or Indian American and they will say to me, oh, what sort of doctor are you? And, you know, that's a stereotype. Yes, indeed. A lot of Indians are doctors, but not all of us are. So stereotypes from a human being standpoint, stereotypes really help us save time. They really help us save time. Stereotypes often are true, but they're not true all the time. And the way I like to think about it is a stereotype is a great mental shortcut, but we can't just stop at the shortcut. We've got to go, okay, this sort of gives me a sense of what to expect, what this person may be, but we shouldn't assume that the stereotype is true of every individual in that group. And I think, unfortunately, we see too much of that where we will run into somebody different. We will run into somebody who's a member of a certain group and assume that they hold all the stereotypes of that group when that is not necessarily the case.
We're talking to psychology professor Regan Gurung from UW-Green Bay. He's sharing ways we can use psychological research to improve our lives.
And you can join us at 800-642-1234. What do you think of this chill, drill, and build idea? Do you have something like that in your daily life that works for you? Do you have a question for our guest about how to apply this in your own life? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're learning how to use psychological science to improve our daily lives. Regan Gurung is with us. He's a psychology professor at UW-Green Bay.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you figured out something about yourself, maybe something that you didn't like, and tried to tackle it, tried to change it? What worked? What didn't work for you? Did you maybe break a habit, get out of that initial angry or stressed response to certain situations? Or do you have questions about how to do that? Call 800-642-1234.
And Regan, let's talk more about social connections and why they matter. What do you think the benefits are?
So I think when I look around at the psychological literature and what seems to be helping the most, one thing that pops up over and over and over is social support. So social support, the feeling that you're cared for or esteemed, is one of those buffers and protective features that I think across the board helps us feel better. And that's why the third part of the chill, drill, and build is actually us building our support networks. What's fascinating is that it's both how much social support we perceive to have, but and how much we actually have that makes a difference. And I think what I want to highlight is it just doesn't, it's not even what you actually get, but even you believing that you have people to turn to when you need it is this buffer that makes us feel better. So that's why I say build those networks, cultivate those good networks, let your friends know you care about them, keep in touch with people, because that is something that, when need be, can be that protective buffer that can help us a lot.
I want to bring on a caller now. We've got Jim on the line in Waukesha. Jim, hi.
Hello. Let me get this off speaker. Okay, thank you. This is really interesting to me, and I was wondering, do you see this as a tool somebody, an addictive person, could use to help them move away from the urges that come along when, say, they run into that point where they're getting antsy and wanting to fall into bad behaviors?
So, Jim, absolutely. I think especially the drill part is a major component of behavior change. So I do a lot of work in health psychology, and I'm actually teaching a health psychology class right now, and all my students have to pick a behavior that they want to change. And what we do is, what we prepare for is those thoughts that are automatic that come up. And you mentioned the word when you get antsy, and that's exactly it. When you get antsy, when you experience that antsiness, what are you going to say to yourself? What are you going to do? And if you prepare those things that you can do when you get antsy, and if you practice, if you drill those things, when you do get antsy, you'll be able to head it off at the pass. So if you're trying to keep away from snacks and you feel that urge for snacks coming, you should have a plan in place. The next time you feel like a snack, what are you going to say to yourself? What are you going to do? And if you practice that thought enough, when you have that thought, you have something to defend against it.
I want to highlight another question from a caller who couldn't stay on the line. I think it's kind of universal for most people in their life. She says she was let down by some friends, got past the anger, but how does she stop replaying it in her head to fully walk away from it?
So there's something else here that we didn't talk about. And when we talk about drilling, one of the things that we have to drill is, and this may help in this situation, is when anytime we experience something, we also have automatic reasons that we tell ourselves why something happened. And we've got to practice thinking of those other reasons that it could be. And I think, you know, I'll give you a simple example. I'm walking down the sidewalk and I pass a friend, and the friend looks right past me. And I go, oh my, what did I do to hurt that person? And later on, I talk to that friend and they go, I say, hey, how come you didn't even look at me? You know, that felt bad. I was hurt. And they go, look at you. I didn't even see you. When did I see you? See, and if I had thought that it could be something else, it would have been different. So we have many of these kinds of automatic thoughts, and especially with our friends, when our friends do something, we often have an automatic thought of what we think it means. And I think we've got to practice coming up with other possible explanations.
Regan Goering is with us, psychologist at UW Green Bay. He is harnessing the power of psychological research to help us improve our lives. We'll go back to your calls now. Lynn is on the line in Onalaska. Lynn, hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
What do you want to tell us about, Lynn?
Well, when I was a young child, I was about a year old, my mom told me that I used to hold my breath. My baby sister was born, and it was my way of getting attention, so I would literally pass out.
Wow.
yeah, and 50 years later, I find that when I'm in very stressful, anxious situations, I'm breathing very shallowly. And my way of combating that was about 10 years ago, I started going to yoga. And yoga is stretching and breathing. And when I find myself in those situations, I'm more aware now. And I just stop myself and I start breathing. And I seem to be able to get past that.
Lynn, thanks for the call. So she's aware, Regan, of the physical symptoms of her stress, and then she's taken this yoga class to help deal with that.
What a great example of drilling. I mean, you've practiced that alternate strategy, and it's working.
Lynn, thanks a lot for that. And we'll go next to David in Milwaukee. David, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
Well, quick question. You were talking earlier about backing down, pulling back from the anger and the different ways to approach that. And that's kind of what we're talking about now, I guess. And about how the different chemicals are released physically in our body when we escalate, when the anger comes. And sometimes I feel like we walk around with a lot of anger that we don't express and or don't back down from. And I was just curious, do you find is the approach best to just try to become more pacifist, to just create these tools to back down from the anger? Or is it also healthy to find healthy ways to express the anger? Is it important to get the anger out in some healthy way?
So here's an interesting thing to do that you may not have thought about, but when you started at a really key place, David, which is we're walking around with a lot of those anger chemicals, or, you know, stress, anger, both of these release a lot of neurochemicals in our brain. Interestingly enough, from an evolutionary standpoint, or when you think about why do we do that? Why does our body do that? we can use the answer to that question to tell us what to do. So our body does that to help us prepare to deal with somebody attacking us. Our body does that to make us deal with this physical stressor. In our world today, we don't have that many physical stressors. We've got mental stressors, but the solution is actually still physical. So something that I do myself and recommend is get more physical activity. If you walk faster, go for a jog, go for a run, step on the treadmill, what your body is doing is actually using up those circulating neurochemicals that will then help you feel better.
Good luck, David. Hope that helps. And Regan, briefly, as we wrap up, how can we get started after we're done talking here?
I think the first step is catch yourself. When you think something automatically, recognize those automatic thoughts and say, all right, the next time that happens, I'm going to recognize that it's automatic. It doesn't have to be that way.
Sounds good. Sounds like something we can start without too much trouble. How long will it take us to get good at this, Regan?
You know, it depends on how hard you work at it, right? Just do it. Practice the drill. Do it often. You'd be surprised how quickly it'll help.
No, that's good to hear. All right. Well, Regan, thank you so much.
You bet. Thank you.
We're talking there to Regan Gurung, professor of human development and psychology at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, talking about how we can use psychological science to make our lives better and to make real and lasting changes in ourselves.